So there has been a lot of flooding out there. Including down in El Paso, so I'll have to get you that news right here. There was some flooding down in, so another one of these extraordinary floods that we got through Texas as well, down in San Antonio, where I believe they got 9 inches two nights ago. So I've got that for you. But the... Obviously, the real conversation about flooding comes in with Louisiana, Baton Rouge, and places like that. And there is no doubt that they're still kind of trying to pick it up and trying to get their lives back together. And many, many, many houses were lost. Down there. So it's just, I don't know. It's real sad to see people who have been through so much. And I'm just looking at AccuWeather right now that is saying downpours to aggravate recovery efforts in flood ravaged Louisiana through Monday. So we've still got that going on down there. Let me get you a little bit more on this weather, but as the season turns, tons of rain. Now I was watching on the, I don't know if you've ever gone online and looked for Doppler, radar, but I was watching the string of storms coming towards Las Cruces last night, but I knew it was going to come because there was, you know, they've got these things color coded and there's light blue and darker blue, and then there's yellow and then there's red, and red is kind of the bullseye. That's where you're, lightning comes from. That's where your heavy squalls come from. And I have a little lightning meter, and I got up in the morning and it had clocked through more than 99. So there must have been hundreds of strikes last night in Dona Ana down into El Paso. And speaking of which, Obama is returning to address the folks of Louisiana days after Donald Trump did so. And here is something from the El Paso Times. A flash flood warning has been issued. And this was last night. This is yesterday. Last night at 6:11, a flash flood warning issued by the National Weather Service for East Central and Northeast El Paso. And from what I understand, there were some flash floods in El Paso in some areas. There were cars that were floating away from, a mall, et cetera. So it was kind of interesting. And we will get to that. But I've got a little bit about San Antonio. Can you imagine that? 9 inches overnight? Check this out.
There's a look at the worst of the flooding from this weekend. Forestville, Texas, this is just outside of San Antonio, where they were hit the hardest with heavy rain that came down through the weekend. Now, more rain's in the forecast, but it doesn't look like it will exacerbate this flooding, which is certainly good news. But here's a look at some of the totals that we've seen over the weekend, and very impressive in and around the San Antonio area, right along that I-37. That's where we've had, in some cases, upwards of 11 inches of rain. More scattered showers in the forecast today, but none of this will be heavy rain. So it looks like the flooding concerns have ended.
So, and they're hoping that it doesn't get too bad again over Louisiana. Anyway, let's take another break here. A little more Cal Jader. I hope you're enjoying this one. I really got turned on to him when I was a kid, I guess, and spent a lot of happy times listening to it. But he's got the mixture of jazz, Afro-Cuban, Brazilian. He's got all that stuff in there. And so you've got to enjoy that. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. And I've got some interesting stuff that I dredged up for you. But I have some more New Mexico news. There was a shooting over the weekend. There was somebody who was shot and killed, believe it or not, on the Loman Overpass. And I've got that story for you coming up here. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. We'll be back to talk about some more local stuff. All right, so this, well, hold on a second here. This guy that was shot and killed, he was supposedly, and there's some video to back this up, took a truck from somebody, stole somebody's truck near Loman Avenue. And this is during the time of the memorial for the officer. And he ended up parking the white truck, looked like a full-size truck, at the area where you would get off onto the freeway. He was out of the vehicle, and there were three officers. There's a video of this. Somebody stopped their car and was videoing this on a phone. And the police were around him, and it was too far away to tell exactly what happened, but the guy was just standing there, and he was kind of, I think he was starting to, he was moving forward or whatever. You got to go see the clip. And then I counted six shots, and they said he was struck at least once, and then he died in the hospital. So, and they said that he had a knife, so. Anyway, kind of sad when somebody loses their life like that, when obviously it didn't have to go out like that. And have another couple of stories here for you. One of which is Dave Ceballos, who was the DA for Diana Martwick is the DA in Alamogordo. She resigns. Then Dave Ceballos is appointed a guy that I've interacted with a little bit over there. He's a longtime top assistant over there. And then he is just in office just for a few months, and he resigns. So another attorney has been appointed the DA in Alamogordo, Otero, Lincoln, John Sugg. So some interesting events going on over there, and I don't know any of the background details. And all right, so let's we'll go to break here, and I've got next for you. Well, I'm looking through my stuff for you. Anyway, I've got a lot of stuff, but let me see if there's anything else weather-related. I wanted to get some information out of El Paso, but I couldn't really find anything. Kelly O'Connell, and you're listening to AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450, and we'll be back to pick it up. So we've got a little report here. Heavy borderland rain brings sight all too familiar for La Union, El Paso, Texas. It's pretty bad in some streets. A lot of people do have trouble with the water, says Sally Cisneros of La Union. Irina Ortez, this time was a little bit worse because it went into our entire yard. And it's something La Union has seen time and again, as you know. And Ortiz says every time it rains, so the stress is there all the time. We know when it's going to come, so we stress out. We can't sleep. We don't go to work today. I had an event and I didn't go because I knew the water was coming. And Cisneros says we're not prepared for that. It comes all of a sudden, and what can people do, you know? And La Union wasn't just the only place. Part of I-10 and Canutillo saw water gushing every which way. And East El Paso got a fair amount of flash floods ripping through Hueco tanks. And all right, so that's what I could find on that. But I was told also that there was flooding in and around at least one mall area, and cars were starting to float away. So that would make you think twice about going shopping. And all right, there is also a mission against the mosquito that has Zika, and this is in Amarillo, Texas, not too far from here. City of Amarillo launched a mission mosquito, a campaign aimed at prevention and education. And listen to this. Officials say 85 species of mosquitoes have been identified in the state of Texas, each capable of carrying a number of diseases, including Zika and dengue fever. But the most prevalent to the area is the West Nile virus. As of mid-June, 44 Zika virus cases were confirmed within Texas. And Mission Mosquito is hoping to teach people how to deal with it. It doesn't take much to breed mosquitoes. A bottle cap can breed 100 mosquitoes a day, said one person. Wow, that's amazing. So, word to the wise, get rid of your standing water. All right, and I do have some... Trying to see if I have any more weather for you. Well, the Blue Fire is still going on over in California, so San Bernardino area. And let's see here. Let me take a little break here and we'll come back. I've got a little bit on what's going on in Louisiana, even though they're waiting for more flooding there. 637 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Be right back. All right, I've got something on this flood in Louisiana, and I think we should remember that the flood is the worst disaster since Superstorm Sandy, and it hasn't received a great deal of press. In addition, the president has been criticized for not seemingly paying any attention to it. And so, as you recall, George Bush was criticized for not going down to Sandy. The president is now supposed to be stopping his vacation to come down tomorrow. But here's a little bit from the National on the flood.
There is no fancy cable news name for the disaster in Louisiana, not a superstorm or some play on the word Armageddon. But while much of the country was caught up in Olympics and politics, the state was suffering on a scale rarely experienced.
It's heartbreaking. It really is.
13 people have died. 40,000 homes have been flooded. The need for shelter so dire, people are sleeping in this film studio. This sugarcane farmer spent days sandbagging. it didn't work.
You're trying, and it just looks like nothing's gonna
save. Geography complicates things. The state is flat, so all this water has nowhere to go.
We washed the floor and bleached the house.
Those that can get back have big worries, cleanup, and cost. It's estimated just 20% of people who lost their homes have flood insurance.
This is going to be a long-term recovery, nothing that's going to get fixed overnight.
U.S. President Barack Obama will tour the area next week, but some said he should have cut his vacation short and come earlier.
This is a poor state, and a lot of people have lost everything they own, and, you know, we're going to need help just as we did in Katrina.
The Katrina reference is politically loaded. Many consider President George W. Bush's slow response to the hurricane and flooding in New Orleans to be a low point of his presidency. The Republican nominee beat the president to the state, touring / campaigning with his running mate.
What's happened here is incredible. Nobody understands how bad it is. It's really incredible. So I'm just here to help. Thank you.
Emergency officials say political or presidential trips can get in the way of relief efforts. When politicians start arriving, it's usually a sign the crisis is over and the recovery underway. That might not be the case for Louisiana, though. The forecast is ominous. More rain could be coming. Lindsay Duncombe, CBC News, Washington.
Now, that's 2 days ago, and we do know that more rain came, and they called it a punch in the gut. And here's a little bit from the governor of Louisiana thanking Donald Trump for showing up.
Trump and Mike Pence came down to Baton Rouge on Friday. You dismissed the visit as a photo op, and you said you wished that Trump would make a donation to a relief organization instead. We did, by the way, check with the campaign. They said that Trump made a $100,000 donation to the Greenwell Springs Baptist Church where he visited. But here's what your fellow Democrat, former Louisiana Senator Mary Landrieu, said about the visit.
I want to thank Mr. Trump for coming to Louisiana. He brought attention to our state, and we need that now.
So, Governor, why is she wrong?
She's not, but you mischaracterized what I said.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't dismiss his trip as a photo op. Before he came down, I said we welcome him here. We want him to be helpful, and we hope that it doesn't turn into a mere photo op. So you got the story backwards.
Okay, so was he helpful now that it's come and gone? Was he helpful? Was it a good thing that he came down?
Well, I think, yeah, for the reasons that I stated earlier, because it helped to shine a spotlight on Louisiana and on the dire situation that we have here, that it was helpful. And I will tell you that I also appreciated the good phone call, the conversation that I had with Governor Pence, who was sincere and genuine when he called and we spoke for a long time on Friday morning about their desire to be helpful.
All right, so you've got a major storm, and you have the president who seems to be ignoring it. We've seen this time and again, the president, and there's an article written on this, and I almost wrote a letter back to the guy that wrote the article, and then I'm thinking, you know, this he's not going to care what I think. But his article was that you have to admire Obama for not doing things that you don't that are not honest. So he portrays Barack Obama as being a thoroughly honest person who did not feel like going to Louisiana during this flooding. And so he didn't go. And so for that reason, he's authentic. And also the fact that he would have just been in the way when, I mean, if you applied that to, you know, the situation with George W. Bush, could you imagine that? So it seems like there's two sets of rules here. And the president, at least as far as the media is concerned, is under a set of rules that you can do anything you want because there's always an explanation of why that was the right thing to do. But if you think about it, if you were caught up in that flood, would you prefer the president show up in your state or not? I mean, you know, it goes without saying you want somebody who is important to show up to get people to understand. You hear that 80% of the people who've lost their homes in this flood, massive flood, don't have any any insurance. So what are they going to do? They're going to be homeless, right? They're going to be at least homeless for a while. But many of those people are probably just going to be swept into the ranks of poverty and become homeless. I mean, what? It's not a rich state to begin with. Here's a little bit more on the flooding.
More than 60,000.
And hold on just a second here. Here we go. The flood in Louisiana as of an hour ago.
Well, more than 60,000 homes are damaged by the catastrophic flooding in the Baton Rouge, Louisiana area.
That's 50% more than what Governor John Bel Edwards said it was last week. According to the Red Cross, it's the nation's worst disaster since Sandy in 2012. FEMA says more than 100,000 people have registered for assistance. President Obama is expected to visit the state tomorrow.
A truck arrived in Louisiana from the University of South Carolina. Students collected supplies to make care packages during last year's historic flooding here in South Carolina. LSU students sent supplies to Columbia. This year, South Carolina returned that favor.
You know, you kind of wonder if some of these places, they could have a law that you've got to build your house on stakes. I don't know if that would take care of all the problem, but, you know, that's what they do in New Orleans. And so we've got a report here that Hillary is in excellent health. I'm telling you, you've got to go track down that YouTube video of her having whatever. It was either something like a seizure or it was a joke, but she didn't act like it was a joke, because as soon as it was over, she changed the subject when her head starts doing the bobble. And so, well, I'll get into that the next hour, but anyway, so it's interesting how the disasters become political footballs, but you know, this, they're going to be dealing with this thing for a long, long time in New Orleans. And the interesting thing is, it wasn't related to a hurricane. It was just a series of very powerful storms that swept through there. And the fact that Louisiana is itself a floodplain. And here is kind of a sad story, but woman allegedly steals ambulance from Cincinnati hospital. A woman was arrested and faces charges after she stole an ambulance from a hospital and drove it to her home late Thursday night last week. Lisa Carr, recently discharged psychiatric patient at Deaconess Hospital, reportedly needed a ride home. An EMS worker from the Cincinnati Fire Department had left Ambulance 9 parked and running outside the hospital, which is not an uncommon event. Carr then hopped in and began her journey home. I'm assuming that she looked for some music on the way home, maybe some rap. She is African American. Police intercepted and attempted to pull the ambulance over on a street, but she ignored them and drove an extra 100 to 150 feet where she parked the vehicle. And as I had mentioned last week, and I was hoping to get a little bit of feedback from you, Susana Martinez, our governor, is pushing to reinstate the death penalty in response to the killing of a municipal police officer down in Hatch. And what they describe as a Republican governor and former district attorney. I mean, obviously, she's going to have some reaction to this. Announced her plans in a passionate appeal for justice last Wednesday. New Mexico repealed the death penalty in 2009. By replacing provisions for lethal injection with a sentence of life. So do you think that we need the death penalty? And I've got the news has come out on Trump, and I've got to assume, I think it's out of the LA Times, Trump is supposedly has a lead nationally of 1 to 2 points. Now, the question is, does that lead translate into the battleground states? Now, there is a claim out there, make of it what you will, that they're using the polling data as yet another way to influence people's opinions. And there's a fantastic article on came out of the New York Post, I think, and it basically said, it's, yeah, Mike Goodwin. Consider this for just a moment. American journalism is collapsing before our eyes. Michael Goodwin, who's won a Pulitzer Prize before. Donald Trump may or may not fix his campaign. Hillary Clinton may or may not become the first female president, but something else has happened before our eyes that is almost as important, the complete collapse of American journalism as we know it. The frenzy to bury Trump is not limited to the Clinton campaign and Obama White House. They are working hand in hand with what was considered the cream of the nation's news organizations, that is, until recently. The shameful display of naked partisanship or bias by the elite media is unlike anything seen in modern America. The largest broadcast networks, CBS, NBC, and ABC, and major newspapers like the New York Times and Washington Post have thrown overboard all pretense of fair play. Their fierce determination to keep Trump out of the Oval Office has no precedent. Indeed, listen to this. No foreign enemy, no terror group, no native criminal gang suffers the daily beatings that Trump does, that the mad mullahs of Iran who call America the great Satan and vow to wipe Israel off the map are treated gently by comparison. By destroying its remaining credibility in trying to help Clinton, the mainstream media's reputation will likely never recover, nor will its standards. No future producer, editor, reporter, or anchor can be expected to meet a test of fairness when that standard has been trashed in such willful and blatant fashion. Now, he goes on to say that it's assumed that most of these people are far to the left, right? Or far to the left, correct. Let me read this a little more. His words are excellent. Liberal bias in journalism is often baked into the cake. The traditional morality of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable leads to demands that government solve every problem. Favoring big government then becomes routine among journalists, especially young journalists. And then he goes on to say this, that he knew what it was like because he started at the New York Times during the Vietnam War and was quite certain about right and wrong. And this guy's still a Democrat, by the way. And then he said, my editors were too, though in a different way. Our boss of bosses, the legendary Abe Rosenthal, knew his reporters leaned left, so he leaned right to keep the paper straight. Now, listen to this. That meant the Times, except for the opinion pages, were scrubbed free of reporters' political views, a rule that was enforced by giving the opinion and news operations separate editors. So this is what he calls the separation between church and state structure at the Times, and those days are gone. And then he says a recent article by media reporter at the New York Times, Jim Ruttenberg, whom I know and like, began this way. If you're a working journalist and you believe that Donald J. Trump is a demagogue playing to the nation's worst racist and nationalistic tendencies, that he cozies up to the anti-American dictators and that he would be dangerous with control of the nuclear codes, U.S. nuclear codes, how the heck are you supposed to cover him? And then he points out that this is just sheer bias. We really don't know what the leadership of Donald Trump, what that would look like. Now, there was another interesting thing that came up. A major GOP person got up and said that he was going to vote for Hillary Clinton because it was a question of character. Now, he seemed to suggest that Donald Trump had no character, had bad character, and that Hillary Clinton had the kind of character that you could support. Now, that's where I'm lost. We don't know what a Trump presidency would look like, but we know it would be farther to the right than Hillary. Hillary, in the meantime, has blamed the fact that she came up with this email solution, her private email in which she did all her business on, she blamed it on Colin Powell, who turned around and said, I sent her an email a year after I heard about it saying that I used private email for my private stuff and public email for the work of the government. So it just seems like Hillary Clinton is a pathological liar. Whenever she gets into a tight spot, she lies, which a lot of people in this country have said they don't have a problem with. But how do you get up and say, therefore, that Donald Trump doesn't have the character? I mean, you know, basically, a lot of people don't like Trump because he said mean things. I mean, that's, you know what I'm saying? That is the extent of it. And he hasn't done anything, but Hillary starts wars and kills people and lies her head off and has a major head injury from what we can gather, I believe anyway. And yet she's far beyond Trump to be America. It's just crazy. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell. It's just one laugh after another. We'll be back. I do have some comedy for you too, so don't go away.
Wachiwara. Wachiwara.
Okay, so there has been a reset on the Trump campaign. You've either heard about it or you haven't, but Paul Manafort, who ran the campaign for a while, who's a true Washington insider, and he's a delegate counter and a manager. He runs, he's got a law degree. He runs basically a PR firm in Washington, but he had a connection to the Ukraine, which was impossible to keep at this point. And I don't think that he, you know, basically, you know, somebody had mentioned this idea to me the other day, and I was thinking about it. He's got Trump has a Zen-like quality. He's of the moment. He, you know, talks to people. He talks to groups. He goes with what he thinks will work. He is a genius at doing that, whether you agree with him and his policies or not. And I'm certain that many of his policies I probably would not be completely on board with. But, if you're a person who believes in completely controlled campaigns and events, Trump is more along the lines of, you know, something spontaneous happening. I don't know how else to. Trump is like a disaster happens and then how people act after the disaster occurs. That's I'm sure that actually the people who run the campaign or the people that know Trump very well would, if you talk to him, would probably describe America has suffered a catastrophic loss of will and of vision. Isn't that what we're missing? When you talk about what has happened to America, most people believe that America is off the track. So what has happened to us? Well, all right, this is just my guess, but I would say it's got to have some relevance to it. We at one time were self-designated as a Christian nation to ourselves, Christian, Catholic, Jewish. Not a lot of really anything else, you know, throw in some Mormons if you want, and then maybe a few other groups, but and no disrespect meant to Mormons, but you know what I'm talking about, is that this country has not only seen itself as a Christian land, but has operated in one form or another as a Christian undertaking. For example, charity is big in the Bible. Charity has been big to America, you know, so for the same reason. And so we've gotten to the point where an increasing number of individuals are saying, I don't believe in the traditional view of the Bible, of the church. And these people are either kind of morphing into their own religion that's somewhat based on Christianity, or they are just walking away. So there's an increasing number. That the phenomenon that we're living through right now is an increasing number of people who define themselves as atheists and agnostics. And so we've lost our identity. We've lost our vision. We had this vision that was stamped on us from the earliest days when John Winthrop, who was the governor of the Plymouth colony, the Massachusetts area, had said that we are a light on the hill. We're a city that's built as a beacon of freedom, as a beacon of faith. And so those days may not be gone, because you could have something like a religious revival, which occurred before when the Great Awakening happened, which is this phenomenal religious event when many people in the church became converted or they became recommitted. There was a tremendous ripple throughout the whole society, and they say that it was then after that the colonial pulpits that then put out information that the founding fathers used. And I mean, all of these guys, you can say that X number of them weren't Christians, but they all basically went to church and they all considered themselves one form of Christian or another. Even Thomas Jefferson would have been a Christian in his mind, but without the magical stuff that Christ did in the New Testament, because he created a Bible in which he cut all that stuff out. And Benjamin Franklin would have had a high opinion of Christ, although he may not have considered himself to be a Christian. But all of these people, you know, Franklin would go to church. Franklin gave free printing to a guy by the name of his last name starts with White. I'm trying to remember, but that's the guy that he went out in the fields and he preached, and all of these people got converted. Ben Franklin did free printing for this guy because he had such a high opinion of him. So none of these people was antagonistic towards Christianity. They all believed, even if they were elites, even if they were part of the Enlightenment. And that's one of the things that happened, is the scientific movement. George Whitefield, who's considered by some people to be the greatest evangelist in history, he would preach up to 50,000 people in an open field. He had an incredible voice, and he had a real sense of theatrics. But none of these founders would have been antagonistic towards the idea that Christianity was important. Now we're living in a time where we have a president where people do not know what he believes. He doesn't go to church. He seems more enthusiastic about Islam than he does about Christianity. And there are increasing numbers of people who are demanding a complete and total separation between church and state, and no public professions of no prayers, no statements along the lines of "In God We Trust." People are rising up, and in some way, I see this as an illiterate movement, because it is the church that laid the foundation in the West for society. I was just reading about this over the weekend, but just reading some medieval history, and one of the things that happened is that the church developed a court system. The court system, like so many other things that America has in it, was basically translated into the society adopted the way that the church ran it. So the church was. The Catholic Church was extremely liberal, and if somebody was charged with a serious crime, they would beat cheeks to get to the church court system and get into that, because the church was very, very loath, very resistant to the idea of killing people. You know, so you get into the church court system, and basically you're saved. So. Anyway, getting back to this, we're living in a time now where we've lost our vision, we've lost our way, and whether people think that it's true or not, that's one issue. But, you know, atheism or agnosticism in history has never been a movement of great charitable ambitions. We are living in a time when an enormous number of wealthy elites are now involved in the charity business, some of which seems to be highly suspicious, like the Clintons. But you think about people like Bill Gates. Until fairly recently, any charity was done through the church. So humanism or agnosticism, atheism, whatever you want to call it, never built hospitals. The hospital movement is a Christian undertaking to care for the sick. So anyway, we're at a crossroads right now, and I think that one of the things that people who are supporting Trump are fighting for, whether they realize it or not, is not just a return to the past. It is a return to some sense that there is a moral order out there that is, you know, tied into God or whatever, and They're very suspicious of the moral order that the president and Hillary Clinton represent, which does not seem to be tied into any church or the Ten Commandments or anything. And they're very, very skeptical of this, and they're afraid of it. And I think they are right to be afraid. All right, take a break here and come back and let's see here. I've got a little bit on the police issue and Hillary, but I've got a, since Toots Thielemann, who's a phenomenal artist, just passed away, I'll play a little of him this week. But Kelly O'Connell, 717 AM, Las Cruces AM, 1450, 523, 1450. We'll be right back. All right. we've got here a little bit of statement on who will support the police, who will they support in this race. Now, Trump has been down in the polls, and that started with the supposed attack against the guy, Kaiser Khan. And hasn't really received much favorable coverage in the news since then. But as Michael Goodman was pointing out, the media is doing everything it can to bury him. And there is a question or a statement out there as to the fact that the polling is being misused. The polling done not to get people's opinions, but to destroy the sense that Trump has a chance, and then that is kind of a self-reinforcing thing. Now, if you don't believe that somebody would use polls that way, why is the media so out of the, just out of the closet in favor of Clinton and attacking Trump constantly? Anyway, here's Rudy Giuliani on cops and Hillary.
11.2 percentage points. How do you turn that around at this point?
Well, you know, it's really early in that sense. I mean, at this stage of the campaign, George Bush, 41, was behind Michael Dukakis by 16%. At this point in the campaign, Ronald Reagan was behind Jimmy Carter by numbers fairly similar to what you just showed right there. In fact, some of those are within the margin of error. So I'm not concerned at all. I think Donald Trump this week had an excellent week, much, much better than Hillary Clinton's. In fact, she kind of disappeared for the week, except for her one appearance that I remember, where she sat with a couple of Democratic-appointed police chiefs trying to claim that she has police support. And I don't know a single cop in the United States that supports her. And I know a lot of cops. And I think what he did this week was he outlined in great detail what he wants to do for this country about Islamic terrorism, about the economy, about bringing jobs back. He then made an audible, meaning he changed his schedule to go down to Louisiana to bring attention to the people of Louisiana while the president, you know, is still up there and wherever he is playing golf.
The president says, of course, he's going down on Tuesday, but that was part of a very busy week for Mr. Trump. Let's talk through some of these.
So anyway, how would a poll be rigged? I'll have that information when we come back. First, I've got a find it here. Oh, okay. Here's a joke. This is somewhat of an obscure joke, but I thought you might enjoy it. Norm MacDonald, who's a very strange guy, is on the Conan O'Brien show.
A moth goes into a podiatrist's office.
A moth goes into a podiatrist's office. Right?
You are correct. A moth goes into a podiatrist's office, mm-hmm. and the podiatrist's office says, "What's the problem?" And the moth says, "What's the problem? Where do I begin, man?" He goes, "I go to work for Gregory Linovich. And all day long, I work." Honestly, Doc, I don't even know what I'm doing anymore. I don't even know if Gregory Linovich knows. He only knows that he has power over me, and that seems to bring him happiness. But I don't know. I wake up in a malaise, and I walk here and there. The podiatrist says, "Oh, yeah?" And the moth goes, "Yes." And he goes, "At night, I sometimes wake up and I turn to some old lady in my bed that's on my arm, a lady that I once loved, Doc. I don't know where to turn to. My youngest, Alexandria, she fell in the cold of last year. Mm-hmm. The cold took her down as it did many of us. And my other boy... And this is the hardest pill to swallow, Doc. My other boy, Gregorio Ivanilidovich. I no longer love him. As much as it pains me to say, when I look in his eyes, all I see is the same cowardice that I catch when I take a glimpse of my own face in the mirror.
Just to let you know, this is something that Norm MacDonald said he heard from his taxi cab driver on the way to the studio.
If only the cowardice was stronger, then perhaps I could bring myself to reach over to that cocked and loaded gun that lays on the bedside behind me. And in this hellish facade once
How long
for
a drive was it? Do you live in the valley? Where do you live? Please, sorry.
He says, Doc. Sometimes I feel like a spider, even though I'm a moth. Just barely hanging on to my web with an everlasting fire underneath me. I'm not feeling good. And so the doctor says, Moth, man, you're troubled. But you should be seeing a psychiatrist. Why on earth did you come here? And then the moth said, because the light was on.
All right, a very bizarre joke, but anyway, we'll take a break here. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. You know, moths are attracted to light. Anyway, we'll be right back. Okay, I thought you might find it interesting to hear about how polling might be rigged. And one way they can do it is obviously they use a group of people that is not representative of the population. Another way is to ask questions that are not fair or are somehow tricky. But anyway, I've got something here. Might shed a little bit of light on this. And it's not just, and this is from the Alex Jones channel. It's not just these people. They're quoting major, you know, individuals in America who are saying that the way they're doing the polling is twisting the data so much that the polls are useless.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the last week, we have seen Donald Trump go from surging in the polls to now losing percentages at an increasing rate. Now, we're going to discuss why that's going on the nightly news tonight, but let's look at some of the facts here. Now, a lot of these polls are asking more than just who are you voting for president. 61% of voters think Hillary Clinton is dishonest, yet somehow she's opening up a lead on Donald Trump. 12% of Republicans are backing Hillary Clinton, while only 5% of Democrats are backing Donald Trump. For the first time in this election cycle, we're seeing a Libertarian and the Green Party candidates enter these polls, and the results have not helped Donald Trump, but Hillary Clinton. When asked who's qualified to be president, 65% said Hillary Clinton versus 43% from Trump. An interesting thing that 61% would disprove of Hillary Clinton's honesty, but say she's qualified to be president. Based on temperament, 64% say that Hillary Clinton has the advantage, while 37% go for Trump. 72% think Clinton has the knowledge to serve more effectively, while 40% would say the same for Donald Trump. Project 538 has broken down this election by the Electoral College based on these polls and are currently giving Hillary Clinton 335 electoral votes to Donald Trump's 202. And now give Hillary Clinton a 77% chance of winning the general election. Every major poll that the New York Times studied has Hillary Clinton ahead of Donald Trump. This is a phenomenon that we did not see last week. According to the New York Times in a Sunday review, Cliff Zukin claims that the election polling is in fact a disaster. I quote, "Election polling is in near crisis and we pollsters know it. So what's the solution? There isn't one. Our old paradigm has broken down." On Sunday, Breitbart's News Daily with SiriusXM host Alex Marlowe, political strategist Pat Caddell outlined his charge that Reuters tampered with its own daily tracking poll to manufacture a sudden surge for Hillary Clinton.
They not only changed their formula to put Hillary ahead, they went back and changed the results for a week of results where Trump was ahead, and then they turned those into Hillary leads. They also erased all the former polling off the site. They didn't tweak their procedure. They cooked it.
Just to let you know, Pat Caddell is the former pollster for Jimmy Carter, so it's not like he's lacking in liberal bona fides. This reminds me of them cooking the data, no pun intended, to increase the global warming amounts, because there is some sort of a program that they use that increases, or they do it manually, the temperatures of a lot of these different temperature stations to make up for one thing or another, and it ends up producing false data, so every year they can get up and announce it's the hottest year in history.
Never in my life have I seen a news organization and a supposedly reputable poll do something so dishonest. They have made a switch as much as 9 points in their results from the beginning of last week, 25th and 26th. It is beyond doubt the most outrageous thing, and this is what the media is willing to do to try to elect her. You must go to the real issue, though, Alex, which is this poll is nothing but a part of a media offensive in the 45 years since I was a child in presidential, top-level presidential campaigns. I have never seen the media on such a jihad and so involved in hiding facts and not following up. And this is a crisis of the democracy, what the press is now doing.
Now, if we're worried about polling fraud, we also need to be aware of election fraud. Homeland Security Chief Jay Johnson has said he has concerns that hackers could infiltrate the voting system.
Well, and that was obvious when they got rid of the paper polling. You have a history, you have a trail, and there was this great outrage over the antiquated polling we have, and nobody else did it that way, and so we had to get these electronic machines. But an electronic machine can be rigged in a way that a paper ballot can't be. 7:37, Kelly O'Connell, and we're going to come back and talk about this stuff a little bit more. I also have a little report on ISIS for you, so be ready for that. The president is being likened to a drug dealer by Senator Kirk. In the meantime, the president gives a weekly address during this massive crisis in Louisiana, the biggest storms in the biggest tragedy, disaster in America since Superstorm Sandy. And what does he talk about? Climate change and national parks. I mean, how would you like to be in Louisiana and the only radio, the only connection to the rest of the world that you have is a radio, and you hear the president giving this surreal statement? I mean, it would be so discouraging, you know? So anyway, more on ISIS. And I got to tell you, there's some heartbreaking information about how ISIS is selling even children, little girls, 1 year old girls, for sex slaves. In the meantime, suicide bombing at Turkish wedding was carried out by a child. And that was done by remote control, apparently. So they sent this kid into this wedding with a suicide vest on and they blew the kid up. I mean, how is it possible that our president and our government seems to be have a positive view of Islam when all of this stuff is happening every day? All right. Now, there's supposed to be a sleeper cell. We've heard this before, but check this out. And this is from, again, InfoWars. ISIS sleeper cells in Mexico confirmed. And this came out August 13th.
Welcome back. Joining me now in studio with an update on those reports that ISIS is operating in Mexico, Joe Biggs. Let's talk about the fact that we had an ISIS operative that was reportedly training militants near the U.S. border for the past year. He actually bragged about it in an Italian newspaper. But what's the new update?
Yeah, I actually went down there with Josh Owens, and we actually did some work. Took a vehicle that I got from a guy. I had this local, and he actually drove me into Juarez, Mexico, over the border and into a town called Anapra. And if you go back and look at these Judicial Watch reports and things like that, and the FBI has confirmed as well that they're a credible source on this intel, that ISIS has a base in the Anapra area, and they are operating their training right now. Now, what happened earlier this year, a top-ranking Homeland Security official acknowledged that Mexican drug cartels were helping ISIS sneak across the southern border to scope out targets for terrorist attacks. ISIS operative Shaikh Muhammad Omar Kabir was reportedly been training militants near the U.S. border in Anapra, which is right outside of Juarez. Kabir actually bragged in an Italian newspaper that we talked about earlier, said he was wanting to kill thousands of people in Texas and Arizona. ISIS operative arrested and criminally charged in Ohio this month has confirmed the terrorist group has cells in Mexico, according to federal authorities. And Judicial Watch has reported on this before, just like we have here at InfoWars. Now, what Josh Owens and I did, we rented a guy out, a plane.
And just to let you know, Anapra is 53 miles from here.
And flew over, found some interesting things, and then that's when I went into Anapra and got on ground and tried to find these little areas. You know, we found a mosque, which is kind of weird, you know, in that area, seeing as how it's predominantly Roman Catholic, you know,
Mexican family.
Religions right. That are out there. So it was really weird to see something like that, you know, but there's definitely something going on, especially when you get out of there and then the FBI comes and meets you at the airport and wants to debrief you and find out what it is that you saw when you were over there.
Yeah, because they're
looking into it. They just can't go over there. They don't have it's all that red tape stuff, but there's definitely a credible threat. The FBI didn't think there was something going on. They wouldn't have stopped me to ask me what it is that I saw. So there's definitely something that's, you know, happening down there south of the border, which is why we need Donald Trump and others to come forward, secure the border so we can get this taken care of.
Right. And there's another story coming out of Texas. Two wealthy Sharia Muslims actually kept slaves in their home here in Texas.
That's super trendy.
A judge told them that, you know, this was crazy and has actually banished them from the United States, found them guilty of engaging in forced labor of their two servants. The judge totally disgusted with them. Well, then they replied that the judge, that they're being Islamophobic because Muhammad had slaves. So you can't punish them for having slaves because that's Islamophobic.
That's their
yeah.
That's your actual argument in court. Well, look.
You're being Islamophobic.
Man said that Muhammad had slaves, so we can have slaves.
Right.
You're going against my religion, buddy. Freedom of religion, I was
right.
told, right, in America?
Exactly.
Where's the Constitution at,
freedom.
All right. Kind of interesting. Now, 53 miles away, and is this story true? I have no idea, but I thought you might find it notable. We'll take a break and come back. I'm going to tell you about the slave selling that ISIS is doing. 746 AM, Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. We got about 0.8 of an inch of rain last night, at least East Mesa Weather Station is reporting that. All right, so this is really an amazing document here, and this is from circa.com. And the question that I have for you before I start this is, the president seemed to show any level of concern or alarm that Christians and other religious groups like Yazidis are being slaughtered by the ISIS fighters in the Middle East? How this issue has been kept off of the media out of the media is just amazing to me. He claims to be a Christian. He went to church at a very Marxist church in Chicago for 23 years. I have never heard him say or do anything that led me to believe that he had any special affinity for Christianity. He's constantly doing things, stating things that makes me feel like he's got some sort of a special affection for Islam. For example, bringing in as many Muslim immigrants or refugees from the Middle East as possible. Hillary wants to increase the number by 5. They want to bring in, now he's being asked to bring in 200,000 Muslims a year. All right. Spoils of war. The Islamic State maintains ISIS, in other words, maintains a detailed price sheet for selling Christians and Yazidi girls as young as 1 year old as sex slaves in a document entitled The Spoils of War, suggesting the terror group may be financing its activities by trafficking women to Turkish, Syrians, Gulf Arabs, and other groups, other areas, according to documents turned into the State Department. All right, so they say there's a danger that some groups in the Middle East, such as Christians and Yazidis, could disappear off of the face of the earth or out of these areas. Now, the ISIS document was verified by the United Nations official who was in charge of that. And a Catholic fraternal organization called Walters Group submitted a 400-page investigative report earlier this year to the State Department, giving evidence of Christian genocide and Christian children and Yazidi children being sold as sex slaves. All right, so here is the ISIS price list for sex slaves. A Yazidi or a Christian child age 1 to 9, $171.43. I don't know why they've put the 43 on there, but Yazidi or Christian woman age 10 to 20, $129. Yazidi or Christian woman 20 to 30, $85. Yazidi or Christian woman age 30 to 40, $64, and Yazidi or Christian woman age 40 to 50, $42. So these are to be used as sex slaves. Now, as I had mentioned to you before, the ISIS is in comportment. It is in agreement with Sharia law, with Muslim law. Now, that proves that Muslim law needs to be updated, right? Why would a child be worth more than, say, a girl from 10 to 20? Number one, they can be brought up in the household and trained to be obedient. Another thing, though, is that there is, in the history of Islam and in the Islamic world now, there is a lot of contact between Muslim men and children. And so there is something called thighing that I won't go into, except to say that there is a prohibition, a general prohibition, against having intercourse with a girl before she has gone through puberty. But that does not mean that a Muslim man couldn't touch the child sexually. He can do other things, including thighing. You can look it up, but it's basically a man pleasuring himself against the thighs of a child. So if you think about that, it would be one thing. It's one thing to buy a slave. It's another thing to buy a slave as young as 1, which is in the ancient world was called a concubine. And there are no, as most people understand, there are no human rights in the Muslim in the Muslim worldview. Your rights come from Allah. If you have a relationship with Allah, you have rights. But a woman never has the full rights of a man, for example, in Islam. Now, just to tell you a little bit more on where the information on the ISIS operations in Mexico come from, there was a guy by the name of Eric Jamal Hendricks, who the U.S. charged with conspiring to provide ISIS and ISIL material support. He was in a sleeper cell with 10 members, according to him, and that he said that his jihadist brothers are just south of the border in Mexico. He lived in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's 35 and was arrested in Ohio recently. And he said that they do have camps out there, and that the camps are used to train men to do terrorist attacks. All right, so that's what we're fighting for. We're fighting to keep women from being enslaved. We're fighting for to go against child sex slaves. I mean, it is so weird that this current administration will stand up and defend gay people and defend the right for transgenders to have their own bathroom, and for the president to call out and on a lot of these different things, at the same time supporting a religion that has absolutely no rights for gays or women or children. And Hillary getting ready to bring all of these people, wanting to increase by times five the number of immigrants into the country. And it's like the mainstream media refuses to put together the picture of what's going on out there, which is very scary, which is leadership by a group of people that don't seem to have any connection to the people on the ground. The people who would have to absorb the suicide bombings or attacks of these immigrants, you know, because it's not going to happen to Obama. It's not going to happen to Hillary. It's not going to happen to John Kerry, that we are the ones who are going to be in a shopping mall when the bomb goes off or somebody pulls out a pistol and starts shooting into us, like happened in Germany a few weeks ago. There have been so many attacks that we've basically almost forgotten about it because we just blotted out of our mind. Now, there are, getting back to Hillary, repeated requests for her to release more medical information. The only information that we have is from a local doctor where she was in New York that just gave a general summary. There's no medical records. We know that she had a serious brain injury when she fell and hit her head. Her body is producing blood clots. She's had, I think, three, and she's on warfarin. Well, she's on Coumadin, which uses warfarin. It's rat poison. It's a blood thinner. And they say that she's getting antiquated help. Now the New York Times tech columnist is calling on Google to hide Hillary's health info so that the Trump campaign and the media don't make anything about it. You know, don't make anything or make a big deal of it. And increasing numbers of people are seeing the video of Hillary having what appears to be a seizure, having a hard time walking. When she walks around or stands, she's got to be held. She's got to have her hands on a chair or a railing or a counter. If she's in somebody's house, it's just very weird. Anyway, thanks for joining me this morning, Kelly O'Connell. And we'll come back in 22 hours on AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE. And we'll take you out with Toots Thielman, the greatest harmonica player in the world, who just passed away in his 90s and was still active in the music scene. Have a great day. We'll meet you back in 22 hours. Ciao.